the show. You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 60. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. Episode 60. Wow. That's a lot of episodes. I know I feel like I say that a lot, and I probably do, but every week I get to do this show is a good week, and it just means that I get to do something that I really enjoy. And the fact that I get to continue to enjoy it, and no one says, hey, don't do that. Or, hey, you know, we need you on this conference call, or we need you in this meeting. It's basically a symptom, or rather a byproduct, okay, a byproduct of being on my own and having the opportunity to do what I want, dictate my own day, and talk to whoever I want to talk to. It's just, it's incredibly gratifying. Thank you for being part of it with me. You are the reason I can do this. I could talk to people all day, but I want to put it out there. I want to spread the word of what people do, how they spend their days, how they are self-motivating, how they are, and again, segues, feeding their crazy, which brings me to this week's guest. Bard Parnell is a good friend of mine, and we met while we were in grad school together at Colorado State University. He was one of the first people to introduce me to ultra running, and I think it was in FHM or Maxim or one of those really not great magazines, that I saw a guy named Dean Karnazes. And Dean Karnazes is sort of the most recognizable mainstream-wise of ultra runners. And now, so what is ultra running? That is people who like to run and who practice running more than a marathon. So more than 26 miles. They look at a marathon and go, 26 miles. You know, I think I'd like to run much further than that. And I think people would call that crazy. I certainly do. I don't like to run. I do run. I run from time to time. I don't think I've ever run more than 4.5 miles in one stretch. But there are people who go, you know what? Let's run 50. You know what? Let's go up to U-Ray and let's run 100. And Bard Parnell is one of those guys. And so I talked to him. He loves to run. We talk about why he loves to run. And it's a fascinating story. He was brutally attacked when he was like 21 years old, and all the medications the doctors were giving him, he wasn't getting any better. He had anxiety, he had insomnia, he had all sorts of maladies after this, and he was encouraged to start working out. I'm not going to step on the story too much because he gets into it in the episode, but running really made a lot of his symptoms go away, made him feel better, made him sleep better at night, really just did all sorts of good things for him, and he really, really got into it, started ultra running. He's run, as I mentioned, the U-Ray 100, which if you've ever been to U-Ray, you know what sort of altitude that is and what kind, you know, what kinds of steep terrain changes that involves. And he is training currently for another 100 coming up in the Black Hills of South Dakota. I think that's in about 3 weeks. But this week he tells me all about ultra running and he tells me about his brand, Feed Your Crazy. Now they have a Kickstarter going right now, so I encourage you to check that out. I have a link to it on the blog, so make sure you go to johnofalltrades.us, click on Bard's episode. It'll take you to the Kickstarter. Now Feed Your Crazy is a lifestyle brand. They have clothing, they have all sorts of other stuff that'll feed your workout needs. Check it out on the blog. I have a link to the website. You can like them on Facebook, you can follow them on Twitter, and most importantly, check out their Kickstarter. Help them kick it into high gear. Now, this week's episode is, I don't like to say this a lot, just because I adore every single episode that I do for a variety of reasons. But this one is one of my favorites, just because it's sort of really far outside of my knowledge base, my sort of comfort level. Like, I'm fit, I do yoga every morning, I run a little bit, but I can't really imagine running 100. So hearing about it was just fascinating to me. Extraordinarily compelling episode with just a great dude. I mean, Bard is one of the most driven but nicest guys you could ever hope to meet. He's got a beautiful wife who is also a delight. They came down here when we did this interview and the four of us all had dinner together. It was lovely. He's got three wonderful children and Bard is just crushing it and chasing his dream as I am mine. So I'm proud to feature him on the show. I'm glad he was able to take some time, and I wish him all the luck in the world with this Kickstarter, as well as the 100-mile ultra marathon that he is doing coming up in about 3 weeks. So here's to you, Bard. This episode was just a joy to do, and I'm pleased to bring it to you right now. You can download it on iTunes. You can stream it on Stitcher. You can subscribe at both those places so that John of All Trades just comes directly to your inbox. Your inbox? What the hell am I talking about? So it comes right to your computer. You don't have to do anything. If you do subscribe, please take a minute. Even if you don't subscribe, please take a minute. If you would rate John of All Trades on either of those platforms and give us a review, we'd really appreciate it. Just because that helps us grow, that helps bring exposure to the show. It helps with the algorithm in both those platforms. I don't know exactly how that works, but it does. So take a minute, search for John of All Trades, J-O-N of All Trades, at iTunes and at Stitcher. And then every episode is available and for free at johnofalltrades.us. So go to J-O-N ofalltrades.us and you will find all 60 episodes of the John of All Trades podcast. So we thank you for being a part of the show. Let's get to episode 60. It's Bard Parnell. He is the founder of Feed Your Crazy. He's an ultra marathoner and he's just a super guy. So happy to bring this show to you. It begins right now.
I did run today twice.
You ran today twice already?
Yeah, two runs.
Yeah. How far was each of them?
They were both 6 miles.
Okay. So were they both outside?
They were.
Yeah. So I'm actually in training for my next 100-miler.
Okay.
And so, because my work schedule and then coming down here this afternoon, I was limited on when I could go out and run, like how long I could go out and run.
Right.
And I didn't want to get up super early this morning. And so I slept in a little bit, got up at 5:50, did an hour run. Well, 48-minute run. It was 6 miles.
You ran 6 miles in 48 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of the comfortable cruising pace for me right now.
Okay. That I could do maybe 4 miles in that.
Okay.
I don't run that often though.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, running for me is, it's challenging because it doesn't come naturally to me and I feel I'm a bit of a Clydesdale.
Right.
So like clop, clop, clop,
yeah.
Clop, clop.
Yeah.
And, so anytime I'm right around 10 minutes, sure. I feel really good. Mm-hmm. But for you, so 8 minutes is kind of your cruising pace.
Yes.
What is your sort of accelerated pace?
If I'm pushing a tempo run, I'm running about a 7-minute mile.
Okay. Wow. And how long can you sustain that?
A little over an hour. About an hour 10 is what I'm doing right now for that pace.
Wow. So you could run theoretically almost 9 miles in an hour.
Almost.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's hard for me to relate to.
It's difficult for me to relate to. I'm not naturally fast. I'm working at it just to pick up a little bit of economy.
How do you get faster? Like, how does one go from, like, how do you reduce your mile times? Like, what is the method for doing that?
Just, slowly increasing your tempo. So you'd get to the point where you were comfortable running a certain amount of miles and then you'd pick a half mile and you'd say, I'm going to run this. I typically run at a 10-minute pace. I'm going to run this next half mile at a 9-minute pace.
Okay.
And then you do that and it raises the thresholds in your body.
Yeah.
And then your muscular system, cardiovascular system. And then as that gets easier, you add more intervals. So you'll do a half mile. You'll take it easy for a quarter mile, let your body to kind of recirculate, catch up. And then you do it again. And as you go through those intervals, the body learns to handle it for longer and longer periods.
Interesting. So basically it's like anything else. It just seems with running for me, because I don't consider myself a natural runner. And when I'm running, I'm basically just concentrating on survival. You know what I mean?
I do. Actually, I very much do know what you're
saying. I'll bet you do, because I mean, you've run distances that are just unfathomable to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the other night you posted on Facebook, you ran a treadmill marathon.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And that to me, I've never come close to running a marathon. I think the most I've ever run in one sort of session is like 4.5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of doing 26.5 miles and then being in the same place, that's amazing to me. So how is it different running like a treadmill marathon versus, or rather, how do you mentally prepare differently for running on a treadmill for that long versus doing it outside.
It's much more painful on the treadmill. That's why we joke about it. I mean, I have a circle of friends that we can cover that distance pretty comfortably, pretty much any time. It's kind of that's kind of our gauge of fitness is could we just go out and run a marathon if we wanted to? The treadmill raises it up a bar, you know, because your mind game has to be much tighter on the treadmill because it's so easy for you to wander into the this hurts zone.
Yeah.
This is not fun zone.
Well, yeah, the scenery never changes.
It never changes. I mean, you're staring at blinking lights, and if you're lucky, you brought your phone, you can listen to some music. And so when I do it on the treadmill, I actually have little mental games that I play, and I bring distractions.
Okay.
You know, if I go up and run in the mountains, I'm distracted all day long, and I could do it forever because it's just beautiful, and I kind of get caught up in that.
Sure.
But on the treadmill, you're running about the same pace. It's a very linear running style. You're doing the exact same stride. You know, no lateral movements, no variations.
Do you adjust the speed of the belt at all?
A little bit. So I play with the treadmill that I use actually has a 3% decline. So you can lower the front end of the treadmill. So it feels like you're running downhill a little bit.
Okay.
And then it goes, you know, a fair amount incline as well. And so I will play with that a little bit. And then when I'm running downhill, when I'm running the decline, I'll pick up my pace. Because it actually, even though you're on the treadmill, it still feels easier.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird to think about. And then when I pick up on an incline, I'll slow it down just a little bit. And then I will actually start to weave a little bit every once in a while on the treadmill just to shake it up a little bit.
Funny. Okay.
Yeah, but it's a mental game. So I'll do the first hour. You know, so I ran this last marathon on the treadmill in a 3:39 pace.
Okay.
So 3 hours and 39 minutes is what I ran it in.
Is that good?
It's pretty good. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I was fairly pleased with that. I mean, it wasn't an all out race, but I was pushing a little bit.
Sure.
And so the first hour I listened to an audiobook.
Okay.
And it went by pretty quickly. The second hour, or the first hour and a half I listened to an audiobook. And then the second hour I listened to music.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that period, I had just a short amount of time left and I was tired at that point mentally.
Yeah.
So I basically shut everything off and just kind of focused on my breathing and focused on my body. How do I feel? Am I feeling any issues?
Yeah.
So you kind of try to break it up into sections.
Is it kind of a meditative state?
Yes.
In a lot of ways, because I mean, you have to be almost sort of very zen about it.
Yeah, if you fight it, it'll eat you up. You know, if you really focus, if you really get focused in on this hurts, my leg hurts, or I'm tired, or I'm hungry, or you know, it's 10 o'clock at night, I could go home and be very happy. And,
right.
You know, it's not like eighth grade high school gym, gym class. You know, there's no coach sitting there yelling at you to do it.
No pudgy coach.
No, I could go home.
Come on, Parnell.
You know, so I think about my big glass of chocolate milk when I get home. And I think about sitting in the hot bathtub. And,
right.
But you focus on just the way that your body feels. And so I start to focus on what's my breathing rate. Because you start to panic. It's almost a claustrophobic feeling at times when you're hurting and you're out of breath and you're tired. But if you start to break those elements out to what is my breathing like, you start to listen to your breathing and you say, you know what? I'm actually not breathing out of control. I'm breathing pretty comfortably. I mean, I'm working hard, but I'm not out of breath horribly. And you say, well, how do my legs feel? And well, my legs are tired and I'm feeling a hot spot here, my hamstring or my left knee or whatever. And I typically feel more of that on the treadmill because it's such a linear movement. It's just a repetitive movement.
Right.
Compared to running trails. But you kind of get in tune with those things. The other thing that I do is tell mental stories. So I'll go into a mental story and next thing I know it's been 15 minutes and I'm halfway, I'm working through the story.
A mental story, like something from your past or?
Are you
making stuff up?
I'm making stuff up. Yeah. Okay. I just make stuff up. It's anything to make you feel good about what you're doing. You know, so sometimes I think about the last couple miles of a race.
Okay.
You know, and what that's going to feel like. So my next race is in June and I'm thinking about, what is it going to feel like mentally finishing that race?
Wow.
You know, what's
visualization exercises.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, stuff around my business, things, you know, what's my next success going to be? What am I going to try to pick up? Things like that. I mean, anything that will make me feel good and happy and raise those endorphins a little bit is awesome towards the end of a long run.
Wow. That's funny. I wrote about this one time. There was a song that came on my iPod and it's by Less Than Jake and it's called Pete Jackson is Getting Married. And I hadn't heard that song in years, but it took me back to college and we had this idea that we were going to all learn the song and sing it at my friend Robert's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And like the song was only like 2.5 minutes, and I thought about this whole story and how we were going to do this and how it fell through. Cause I mean, you're in college, like you're not going to take the time to learn this song. Like, but, as soon as the song was over, I go, wait, how long have I been running now? So right. I can see like how that helps.
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing.
It's a good mental distraction.
Yeah, totally. So Bard Parnell.
Yes.
Amazing. Thank you for coming down. We've been trying to set this up for how long?
It's been
a while.
Well, I think I stood you guys up in July.
Yeah, but for a good reason. I mean, you were out running, right?
I was out training, yeah.
And didn't, cause, I mean, you were training, I think, for the URAE 100.
URAE 100, yes.
Good Lord, which running 100 miles at that altitude?
Yeah, it was a beast.
I mean, that's crazy, and I have a black belt in segues, clearly, because you are the founder of Feed Your Crazy.
Yes.
As well. Mm-hmm. And you have to feed your crazy if you want to do something like the URAE 100.
Absolutely.
So it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because I'm always enthralled by people who do things that are very much out of my world. Mm-hmm. And I've never, I mean, we've covered this already, I feel like, at length. We're only like 10 minutes into this, but I'm not a natural runner, and so watching you do what you do is just fascinating to me. And so talk me through a little bit how Feed Your Crazy came to be, what you aspire to do, and then I'd like to touch on sort of your history as a runner. But yeah. Take me through Feed Your Crazy to start.
Well, they're all intertwined. I mean, I believe that my own personal philosophy is if you're going to do something, you might as well do something you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And Feed Your Crazy and ultra running, for me, ultra running is my crazy.
Okay.
And I say that everybody has a crazy and you just have to find it and feed it.
Okay.
And so Feed Your Crazy came about as a result of my running. When I was 21, I was a victim of a violent assault and I took a severe head trauma, fractured ribs, ended up in the intensive care unit.
So what happened? A violent head trauma.
Yeah.
What was going on?
I won't go too far into the weeds on it, but basically a guy came up from behind with the baseball bat and crushed my skull.
But why?
He had issues, I assume.
Okay. Was this just like out of the blue? I mean, were you just sort of minding your own business or, had you interacted with this person?
I had interacted with him a little bit.
Okay.
The long and short of it is I've never gotten a real good explanation of why it happened.
Okay.
It would be, you know, my guess as far as, you know, why it happened. Growing up in, you know, where I did, I've seen a lot of people kind of fly off the handle. This guy flew off the handle.
Okay.
I started to walk away and my therapist tells me that I should have run away instead of walk away.
Okay.
And I didn't get away fast enough and he came up behind me and I really didn't think he would, but he did. He came at me and actually hit me once in the head, knocked me out, crushed part of my skull.
Oh my gosh.
And then continued to beat me as I was down, broke a couple of my ribs.
Yikes,
bruised me up pretty good. But,
but you don't have a lot of memory of this, it sounds like.
It's very fuzzy. Some of it is very vivid and some of it is very hazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as a result of that head trauma, I did what every, I would say normal person would do is after the physical recovery occurred, I turned to medicine. Mm-hmm. I had very severe anxiety. I think for pretty obvious reasons. I also had a lot of difficulty sleeping. I was new in my first year of college, after this had happened, and I was having a very difficult time studying.
First year of undergrad?
First year of undergrad.
Okay. Yeah. Because I just, in the interest of full disclosure, like we're doing some journalism thing here, but,
yeah.
I mean, we know each other from our graduate program at CSU.
Yes.
We met there in 04. We were there 04 to 06.
Yep.
And, so this was undergrad. Where'd you go to undergrad, if you don't mind
Utah
sharing?
Utah Valley University.
Utah Valley. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
And so I really struggled for a long time. A physical repercussions of the injury is I suffered from vertigo for about a year. I started getting migraines as a result. They were very frequent. I basically addicted to medication, because of the head trauma. I didn't want to get...
like painkillers? That kind
well,
of thing?
Well, yeah. Or? See, I was trying to avoid painkillers with the headaches. And so I started taking things like Excedrin that had caffeine in it. I got to the point where I was chewing up about 6 or 7 of those a day.
Okay.
Which obviously is not a healthy thing to be doing.
Yeah.
Got addicted to the caffeine. I'm sure that probably contributed to my anxiety, which made it worse.
Yeah.
My inability to sleep. These things all start to snowball very quickly.
Perhaps, yeah.
So I went to my doctor. I said, I'm having these problems sleeping. I'm having these problems focusing. What do you recommend? And, you know, she did what a lot of, you know, modern doctors would do and said, well, here's a medication, go give it a try.
Yeah, here's something else. Here's a downer, right?
Here's a new pill. And so she put me on medication to sleep, which was wonderful at first because I would take the medication, within a half an hour I'd be asleep.
Yeah.
And I loved that. But.
And that had to be very different from your experience.
Yes, because I wasn't sleeping and I was constantly exhausted.
Of course.
And then, you know, she said, well, here's a medication to help you focus in class and reduce the anxiety. And, it didn't work and it screwed me up horribly. I started having problems with, you know, I was newly married at the time. So you're brand new married. You're supposed to be out having fun.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to do a lot of things that you would expect to be able to do as a newly married person. I still wasn't able to really focus. I was very unhappy and the medication started messing with my head and with my body. It almost made it worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went back in. I said, this medication is not working for me. She said, oh, here's something else.
Right.
You know, and I went through about 6 months of that and I found myself
just jumping from one pill to another.
On the third medication, still on sleep meds, sitting in my little bedroom apartment there, sitting on the floor crying. I had no idea what to do. I was just a wreck.
Yeah.
My you know, lovely wife of, you know, all of about 6 months, I had no idea what to do for me.
Right.
The very next week, within a week of that happening, kind of really just absolutely struggling what to do, my mom called me and she said, Bard, you know, I've been running since you were born, basically. I've never done a race. So if you will agree to come out and train for this half marathon, I will buy you a new pair of shoes and I'll pay for the race entry.
Sweet.
And I thought, you know what? Why not? And so I dug up a pair of old tennis shoes that I had in my closet and I went out for a run and I made all of about a mile and I had to walk back.
So you weren't a runner up to that point in your life?
No.
Really? Like not at all?
I ran cross country in junior high, but that was about it. Yeah.
Okay. So
played water polo in high school. I mean, I was always into athletics,
but I wasn't
really a runner.
Okay.
Did
you like exercise regularly though? I mean, like did you lift or anything?
I lifted a little bit, but I was having a lot of issues. And so I wasn't as fit or athletic as I would have liked to have been obviously at that point.
Yeah. I gotcha.
And I started running. And, where Feed Your Crazy, where the first roots, the inception of Feed Your Crazy first started was, I started doing these training runs and I got a plan and I started learning how to run distance. And I remember my first 8 mile long run and it blew my mind that I had just run 8 miles. I was so excited.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I worked for months on this and, I felt sick for half a day and my legs hurt and my body was chafed and like all of these things that happened
to me. Like your thighs and your armpits and stuff?
Everything.
Right,
when you first start learning how to do this, you have all sorts of issues.
Right.
And, I was so excited. I had run 8 miles.
Yeah.
And a funny thing had happened to me over the last few months. I'd stopped taking medications.
Oh.
I had stopped taking the anxiety medications. I started to look forward to my runs. I started to feel better about myself. I started running in the morning because I found that it helped me clear my head, helped me focus. And then at night, I was tired.
Yeah.
So I could fall asleep.
Yeah, your body's tired, right?
Yeah. It was like long run day was the best day of the week because I was always so tired by the time bedtime came around. I would just sleep awesome.
Yeah.
Stopped taking all my medications. I started feeling good. Well, I got to this day and I was so excited. And I went to visit some friends. We were all hanging out that evening and they were talking to, hey, what did you do today? Oh, I went for an 8 mile run. I tried to keep it on kind of on that. Oh yeah, I just been out and ran 8 miles. And the first thing they said was, well, that's crazy. Why would you want to do that?
Right.
And I kind of felt like they just pulled the rug out from underneath me. I was so proud of the fact that I had just run this 8 miles and they totally shot me down.
Yeah. 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 Just sort of, popped the balloon a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I really deflated all my energy about it. And it's not an uncommon occurrence. Over the years, as I've continued to progress, I ran half marathons for a while. I got into marathons. I did marathons for a while. I got into trail running. I got into ultras.
Yeah.
And all the years throughout the progression, people call you crazy for it.
Mm.
And it's not just ultra runners because that's not what I do now, but it's if you're into CrossFit, if someone asks you, what are you going to do? And you say, well, I'm going to go for a quick run or I'm going to go hit the gym or I'm going to go do my yoga class. It's like, well, that's kind of crazy. You know, we're actually a very small percentage of the, if you think about the world population, what is it? Something like less than 1% of the world population has run a marathon. Well, what's the population of the world who likes to or enjoys or for good reason goes to the gym or hits a workout or goes for a run or does those physical activities to make themselves feel better when self-medication, when alcohol, when all of these things are so prevalent and so easy to kind of sedate those feelings.
Mm.
It's so prevalent. And so I like to say that the world will kill fitness if it can. Because it's so easy to just sit on a couch. It's so easy to just relax and let yourself numb instead of kind of fight that fear and do something physically active.
Hmm.
And so throughout all the years, it really hurt my feelings when people called me crazy. I'm like, I'm a pretty fit person. I got off medication. I got off all these drugs. I feel better. I sleep better. I'm a happier person for what I do. Why would you call me crazy?
Yeah.
And I really kind of resented it for a long time. Well, then finally one day I realized that I was crazy. by the world's standards, by the, you know, if you break down how many people actually train and work out and like doing it.
Yeah.
And you look at that percentage of the world population, we are by far the minority.
Interesting.
You know, so by the standard of the larger population of the world, I am crazy. And I decided, you know, why should I continue to fight and justify what I do? And so now people say, well, that's crazy. I say, yes, it is. Absolutely. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm proud of it.
That's funny. You know, I hadn't really thought about that, but for the last 6 months since Grace has been born, I started doing this DDP yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And I wake up probably 5 mornings a week at 6 a.m. and I'll do somewhere between, you know, a half hour and an hour of yoga. And people are like, wow, you wake up at 6 and do that? And you hear their voice and you go, well, yeah, that's just part of my life. Like, and the thing I like about it, I was struck by when you said, you liked running in the morning because you kind of clear your head. I kind of like working out in the morning too, because it's one of those things where it's like you get later in the day and you go, oh geez, I should probably work out. And you go, wait, I already did.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It almost feels
pat
like
myself
cheating
on the back. Yeah.
It's like, okay, well that's, I'm good to go. You know, if you have the energy, you can always do it again.
Yep.
But you've got that sort of like in the bank, and that's really cool. And you think about everyone else who's having a hard time sort of getting up, and I'm ready to start my day as soon as I do that.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Absolutely.
So I get the philosophy. That's, I mean, the fact that, you know, people call you crazy and you've sort of embraced that term. Has that amplified you to pursue things like the U-Ray 100 or to go even further in this?
For me, the drive to explore further and further distances has just been kind of an internal drive. It's something, okay, like I say, when my very first run was a half marathon, and within minutes I was hooked to the first race.
Okay.
I liked the training. It made me feel good. It got me, I believe it got me healthy.
Okay.
It helped me really improve my situation, to the point where I don't take medications. I don't deal with any of those things. And I struggle with, you know, the anxiety and the migraines, but it's just something that I've just kind of continued to deal with.
Sure.
But I got into the half marathons and I thought, well, I can do a marathon now. And I did that, and I liked the distance and I liked the feel of being able to accomplish that. And then I get into the further. So I continued to do this long before I actually coined the feed your crazy term, before it really came out. What I tell people is, you know, cause people say, oh, well, I can't be like that. I'm not at all. I can't run 100 miles. That's ridiculous. And I tell people, like, you don't have to. You know, everyone has a crazy.
No one is making you do anything.
Yeah. It's what about your daily life drives you? And it can be, you know, like you say, you do yoga every morning and you feel good when you do it. Sometimes you're bummed out when you don't get to it. It kind of kind of boosts you mentally. That's your crazy. That's what you like to do.
Hmm.
And I have friends that are into CrossFit. I have friends that are Ironmans. I have a core group of friends that are ultra runners because that's what we like to do.
Sure. Yeah.
But everyone has their little crazy deep down inside. And when they feed it, they feel better about themselves. They feel better about life. They enjoy their day more. Whether it's going out for a walk at lunch or, you know, like me having to do a double workout because I'm training, you know,
right.
Whatever it is that works for you.
Interesting. One of the things that, I mean, you've talked about this and I feel compelled to ask it because you compared this to, you know, numbing yourself to sort of the pain of the day,
yeah,
you know, compared to using alcohol or, you know, maybe you use pills or weed or whatever, right?
Yep.
Is there a little bit, because, you know, you said you feel bad if you don't get to it, you know, you sort of miss it, you crave it, you get hooked. There's almost addiction language.
Yes.
Can this be taken too far and can it be an addiction surrogate?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, obviously I won't go into details, but I have several friends who are ultra runners who have dealt with addiction, very serious addiction. And
but I mean, could this itself be an addiction?
Yes, absolutely. It can replace it because you get the chemical, the endorphins when you train, when you do runs, you know, the 100 milers is a really good example, you know, and I had never really thought about this until my brother, who's a, you know, got a PhD in counseling and psychology and pointed this out to me. I came back from my very first 100 miler and I went into this very deep depression for a few days.
Really?
And I was just a mess and I couldn't figure out why and I was really struggling. So I called him up. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm really struggling here. And he's like, Bart, you know, think about this for a second. You know, you spend months and months and months fixated on this one thing that you have to do almost compulsively.
Yeah.
So, and then you train your body to be used to these consistent endorphin rush and flow of your training.
Mm,
you know, they've done how many studies that show that exercise increases all these chemicals in your brain.
And yeah, then, the oxytocin. And
oh
whatever,
yeah, all sorts
right?
of things
yeah.
happening here. You know, whether you want to call it the runner's high or just the feeling of being fit and accomplishing your task.
Sure.
And then you spend 20 to 30 hours on the go where your body is just pumping you with all sorts of chemicals at first to keep you going and then towards the end to get you to stop because your body is failing. It's crashing. It's telling you to stop. It tries to get you to stop.
It's almost like an overdose.
Yeah. So you spend, you know, almost 20 to 30 hours of chemicals just coursing through your body.
Wow.
And then you're done. You no longer have the fixation. You've come down on a very serious high of these chemicals that are occurring in your body and in your brain.
Yeah.
And then you wonder why you're depressed about it. I mean, give me a break, Bart. Just let yourself enjoy it, feel it for a little while, and you'll bounce back.
Wow.
So I do think that it can certainly be taken too far. I've seen people sacrifice family, career, you know, big aspirations so they could go out and continue to run or train.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think everybody's like that, but I have seen
no,
it.
Just like anything,
I think that it can be taken too far, if you allow it.
Yeah, because I mean, the training component alone is a huge time commitment
oh, yeah,
as well.
Huge.
So, I mean, knowing what I know about your family, you know, I know that you guys are very supportive of one another and pursuing your goals, but I mean, there are times you described to me the treadmill marathon, right?
Yeah.
So that's 3:39. I mean, that's a lot of time commitment.
On a Friday night.
Yeah. A Friday night. So not so much date night.
No date night that night.
how do you sort of balance, the training component, you know, the time commitment associated with this with everything else going on in your life? Cause I mean, you have beautiful children, you have a wonderful wife, you have your day job.
Yep.
Is that challenging for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's a struggle because at points you get to, let me give you an example. I finished a 50-mile race a few years ago. And when I finished, I looked at a couple of the leaders and I was like, or a couple of guys were ahead of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, you know, man, if I just worked a little bit harder, if I just trained a little bit more.
Ooh, slippery slope.
I think I could run at that level. And, my wife stopped me for a minute. You know, I was telling this to my wife as I was sitting there with my feet in the creek after this 50-mile run.
Right.
And she's like, Bard, take a look around you. You know, what do you see? You know, and I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I just finished this 50-mile race. I'm at this finish line. She's like, no, seriously, take a look. And I'm sitting here and right in front of me are my three kids playing in this little creek, throwing rocks. You know, when I got within, you know, 20 yards of the finish line, my kids ran out there. They've run in with me. They're high-fiving me. And I'm the coolest guy in the world for a few minutes. My kids think I am just, oh my gosh, my dad just ran 50 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my dad's crazy. It's awesome. And I think it kind of hit me. I was like, yeah, I could train a few more hours a week.
Sure.
Or I could enjoy the fact that this activity makes me happy. It makes me healthy.
Yeah.
And I get to do it. So I've kind of accepted the fact that I'm never going to be a competitive runner. I'm never going to win races. And that's not why I do it, quite frankly. I think if that was my primary goal, I would have quit a long time ago.
Yeah.
I run and I do these kind of things because I really enjoy it. I get so many races a year that I'm allowed to race. I get 100 a year.
good.
Because of one of the training commitment, but also because my wife crews and paces me for the 100 milers.
Oh, wow.
So she's out on the course with me. And so she checks in with me throughout the course. And then for my last 200s, she's been the one to bring me into the finish line.
Okay.
And so on 100 mile distances, after about 50, they'll usually let you have a runner with you on the course because you're heading into the nighttime, you're tired, you're fatigued, you start having issues. Some people hallucinate, lose your way. You know, there are some risks involved.
And sure.
So she has been the one that, you know, my first race, she brought me in the last 10 miles. My second 100 miler in Ure, she brought me in the last 20 miles.
Wow.
And so she sees what it takes.
Did she run those 20 miles?
Yeah, she ran. Well, I wasn't moving very fast, but she did. Obviously, she jumped out there and she runs with me.
What was your pace approximately at that point?
Oh my gosh, those last 20 miles were very slow. We had one climb to do, but the Ure, you finish doing about a 3,000 foot climb.
You finish with that?
Yeah, you finish with that.
That seems diabolical.
Well, yeah, that's a rough race, but beautiful and well run. And so you have to do the last climb. You're in Ridgeview, which is a town just outside of Ure, and you climb into the mountains, you come up over the saddle, and then you drop down into Ure. So you've got a, you know, I was like a 6-mile climb, about 3,000 feet. you do, you drop down about 2-3 miles, and then you have about a mile and a half, 2 miles along the road into the actual finish line.
Jeez, okay.
And this is, you know, for me, I finished that race in about 33 hours, I think is what I finished that one in. And so this was about 25 to 33 hours into the race. Jeez. And so think about how depleted your body is. You're starting to really shut down, having some very serious issues. And so she sees what that does to me. And it's not always pretty. I mean,
No, I'm sure it isn't.
I get, you know, if I stop at all, I get really shaky. My body is kind of in overload and shutdown and depletion modes. And so, she's fantastic on the course. I mean, she kicks me in the butt. She says, eat your food.
Yeah.
Here's your water. Keep moving. Don't stop. But it's hard on her. It's taxing on her to push me that way because she knows I'm in pain. I'm tired. I'm worn out at that point.
Well, sure.
So she doesn't like to do that more than once a year. So I mean, there are limitations that
right.
we work out. And I accept the fact that, you know what, I'm not a career runner. And so there is a fine balance to work, in the relationship. And
okay.
she's very supportive of it.
Okay. That's awesome. That certainly makes it easier to pursue this. So I'm dying to know. Okay. 100-mile race.
Mm-hmm.
Take me through sort of what your training regimen is like leading up to that.
Yeah.
And then I want to go through what the race experience is actually like.
Yeah, yeah. So, I generally run enough. So even when I'm kind of off season, I run between 30 and 50 miles a week.
Okay.
So at any point, if I wanted to, I could go out and run a marathon. It's kind of my baseline.
That's your baseline fitness. Like,
not fast, mind you. I'm not going to race a marathon, but I could go do it if I wanted
to. Like you could go do it and complete it reasonably comfortably.
Yes.
That's your baseline level of fitness.
Mm-hmm.
That's a high level of fitness, I would argue.
It is. Yeah, it's a high standard to live, but that's where I found that I'm pretty comfortable.
Okay.
At.
That's where you like to live your life.
Yes.
I
like it. It allows me to be pretty comfortable.
Okay, great.
And so when I start ramping into 100-miler, I typically, about 6 months out, I will start doing a lot of cross training just to make sure the overall body is very fit.
Okay.
So I'll ramp my miles up to about 50 miles, 60 miles a week consistently. And then I'll be doing another 3 to 5 hours a week of cross training. So stair climbing to build leg strength, cycling,
okay.
Weight training I think is really important. And then about...
Do you do any like swimming?
I have not swam in a while.
Okay.
I do really like it. It's just such a time intensive activity that I just haven't gotten into it recently.
Okay.
I played water polo in high school, so I do love it. I haven't done it for a while.
Oh, water polo. I was a swimmer and water polo was too hard for me. I mean, any sport where swimming is like the rest activity.
That's right.
It's
tough.
Is a crazy sport.
And so when then about 6 weeks out, 7 weeks out, I drastically cut back the amount of cross training I do and I start ramping up my miles.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm at right now for this training circuit is.
Wait, how far out are you? When is the race?
June 26th is my next race.
June 26th.
Yeah.
And this is going to come out, I think, June 3rd. So you'll be about 3 weeks out.
Yeah, so I'll be right in the peak of my training at that point.
Okay, and then what? You taper?
I taper a little.
Okay,
a little bit. Yeah. So we'll.
Okay. Yeah, we're jumping into it.
We're working into that.
Yeah.
So then, for a couple of weeks, I ramp up from about 50 to about 90 miles a week. So I almost double my miles, and then I'm doing pretty serious weekend long runs. And so a short run on the weekend is a marathon on like a treadmill. Like that's a tough mental game, but physically it's not too difficult.
Sure. And logistically pretty nice.
Yeah. There's not a lot of travel time or anything.
Yeah.
The race, you know, the train run that I was doing last year when I stood you guys up on this was we went up to Rocky Mountain National Park, which is where we really love to do our training because you're at altitude.
Yeah.
And then we just do these long all day grinds. You know, we start at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're doing, you start out kind of jogging uphill, doing easy speed, you know, run, which is usually very slow. But by the end of the day, it's just, you're hiking. I mean, you're hiking as quickly as you can uphill. You run the downhill and flats. And my last long run up in Rocky, I peaked at about 34, 35 miles and we did 1, 2, 3 climbs. With about 14,000 feet of elevation gain across the day.
Last year when you were doing this, didn't your training partner's like legs blow up or something?
Yeah. We were supposed to be done and we ended up being about 2.5 hours slower than we thought we were going to be.
Right.
We got stuck up in Rocky and we just didn't make it back in time. But you know, that's the difficulty of this kind of training. And sure. That's where, like, you know, Ricky's support is really important to me, because as I get into the last few weeks, that's what my long runs are like. I mean, we basically lose Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, I usually have to get to bed at a decent time on Friday because I've got to be up at 3 a.m. to be up into the mountains to run for 8 or 10 hours. And then it's an hour and a half back. And then, you know, it takes me a good hour to get, you know, once I'm home, I got to get calories in me. I got to shower and I got to get dressed. And it's like this whole procedure that it's not like you're quickly back at it, you know?
Yeah. It's not like you just splash some water on your face and you're good to go.
No, you're pretty shot, you know? But I love the feeling of those kind of days. I love coming home and thinking about what I had just done. And I love the mountains. I'm a huge mountain person.
Yeah.
So I'll continue to peak up to that. So I'm doing, you know, 90 to 100 miles a week for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And then I taper about 2 weeks out. Some people do as far as 3 weeks out, but I start to go really nutty. Runners joke about the taper and taper crazies and how you just go nutty because you're running 100 miles a week and then suddenly you're doing 20 miles a week.
Yeah.
And I have physical issues. My body starts to tighten up. I start to have pains. Mm. So I do my last long run 2 weeks out and then I start to just cut my mileage back.
Okay.
And then the last week or two, you're doing 15, 20 miles a week. Just keep your legs and body loose. Keep yourself feeling comfortable.
So how do you break down 15 to 20 miles a week then?
I'll go out 3 times that week and I'll run anywhere, you know, 5 to 7 miles. An easy run. At that point, going out for an hour at a comfortable pace is almost like nothing. You finish the hour and you're like, all right, I just warmed up.
Yeah, you just do it like you're taking a shower, right?
It becomes second nature to you at that point.
Wow, okay. And then race day comes.
Race day.
So, in the days leading up to that, like, how are you eating? How are you sleeping? Like, how are you prepping? Because clearly you're not running that much.
No.
But, so, like, what is some of the other prep that goes into it?
Well, I try not to go crazy. Because you're just so used to be doing so much. I try to eat pretty naturally, but, you know, about 2-3 days out, I do start making sure that I'm getting, good fats in. People go really carb heavy and your body actually has a lot more fat reserve than it has sugar reserve. You know, the glycogens and the sugars that your body burns up when you run fast or run hard is actually a lot less available than like fats are in your body.
Okay.
Even a very lean, fit athlete has a lot more fat stores reserves than they do actual sugars.
Interesting.
So make sure you're getting the right kinds of fats in your diet. Make sure, you know, and then your brain functions on fat. I mean, the calories.
So like what? Like what are you eating? Like,
you know, avocados and good olive oils and things like that that are, you know, kind of rich natural oils.
Like salmon, that kind of thing?
Yeah, salmon's great proteins. It's got some fatty oils in it as well, omegas. Gotcha. Making sure that, you know, the last day leading up into it, I'm making sure that I'm staying hydrated. We live in Colorado, hydration is an issue. It can go very quickly.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, you're traveling to your race. And so, you know, driving to Ouray was like a 6.5-7 hour drive. We had kids. We had to stop a couple times. So I get out a couple hours and stretch my legs, making sure I'm drinking enough, and just trying to keep the crazies down because, you know, it's coming up. You start to get a little nutty about it.
Yeah, you get the anxiety, you get the sort of anticipation, right?
Yeah, and you get there and you like, you know, so this one's my next race is in the Black Hills of South Dakota. So you get to where you're staying and you start looking around and thinking, before I know it, I'm going to be on the trail and then it's not going to stop until I cover 100 miles. And that's kind of a daunting thing. You train for it, you get ready for it, but then when it's like, oh man, you know, especially the night before, you start thinking about it.
It's like anything else though. I mean, it's like a big presentation, public speaking engagement before you get married. Like it's anything, you know, you can prepare all day for it.
Yep.
But then it comes time to do it and you go, okay, wow.
Yeah, it's time to go.
I used to feel that way for swim races.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd be standing on the blocks and be like, oh God, I'm going to do like 100 fly here and I know I can do it, but I'm going to hurt at the end of it. Like it's a sprint and I'm going to hurt and you go, wow. Okay. So how am I going to manage through that? How am I going to deal with the pain? You don't know until you're sort of in it. And my friend Jamie talked about when he played football and he said, you were always so nervous until you hit someone the first time.
Yes.
And as soon as you hit someone, like as soon as you're out there, you get maybe a mile under your belt, I'm assuming, you go, okay, we're good. Now we're in it. Now it's fine.
I'm nervous until they say go. You know, because once they say go, you're just doing what you always do. you know?
Right.
And yeah, that's probably the reason why I run in the mountains is it's beautiful. I mean,
sure.
The first couple hours are usually in the dark and you just kind of go, but you know, you just kind of get into go mode. Yeah. And once they say go, it's like all the stress is off. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And I'm usually pretty good for a couple hours. It's, you know, the first day is usually not bad. You know, in 100 miler, there's
the
a couple.
First day.
Well,
God, man.
So the first 10 or 12 hours roughly is what, you know, what for me is what isn't bad. You know, I like to tell people that it, you know, 100 miler, the first 50 is just there. You have to get through it because then you gotta get to the back 50. And the back 50 is where it starts to really hurt.
I thought that doing 100 meters of butterfly, I'd get done with the first 50 and I'd go, oh God, I have to do this again.
Well, it's a high intensity. I mean, you're going all out. You know, the ultra marathon run for me anyways, I'm not going all out. It's a comfortable pace. And so part of the first day is just being, you know, enjoying the trail. Sometimes you're running with somebody else, kind of run the same pace and
chat. Still, seriously, 50 miles though is still, I mean, you know, you're talking about your long runs in Rocky Mountain National Park. You're talking 35 miles.
Yeah.
Doing 50 miles is still like a comfortable pace. Fine.
It's a lot of miles.
I grant you that.
Yeah.
But it's still a long way. It's
still a long
and
way.
So you go, okay, now we're done with that. Now I got to do it again.
Yes.
So, geez. Okay.
So the first 50, you just want to get through. I mean, the reality is you want to get there as quickly, but as you keep your body under control,
sure,
as quickly, as much as you can, because you know the back half is where it's really going to have problems. And if you don't, if you go too fast the first 50, you're going to blow up on the back 50.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't eat enough, if you don't drink enough, you're really going to feel it on the back 50.
So how frequently and how much are you like eating and drinking? Like,
so as much as you can, really.
Okay.
My very first 100 miler, I ran into a buddy of mine who was pretty experienced in 100 mile distance at about 40. And I was running to the aid station. They have aid stations every couple of miles, depending on, you know, the course that varies a little bit. And he's like, hey, Bart, how you feeling? I said, I feel great. He said, all right, we'll eat because it won't last long. Mm. You know, so the secret is to get as many calories in as you can.
Okay.
So I wore a heart rate monitor for my first 100, and the battery in my watch died at 50 miles in, roughly. But the calorie count and burn based on my heart rate for the first 50 was about 10,000 calories.
Jeez.
So you basically can't you can eat enough, but your body can only digest and absorb so many carbohydrates and proteins and fats per hour.
Yeah.
So the trick in 100 is you physically cannot, as far as I understand, the science may be somewhere that I don't understand it, physically cannot take in enough calories to match what you're burning.
Okay.
And so every aid station, which is usually between 7 and 10 miles, you're drinking as much as you can, you're eating as much as you can. Because at some point in the back half, you're going to not want to eat and you're not going to want to drink.
Well, sure.
And you've got to kind of force your body to do it.
So, like, what kinds of things are you eating and drinking? Is it like, you know, those weird like protein gels or like what kinds of stuff?
It's evolved across the races that I've done. It starts with gels because it's easy and what's common.
And high caloric value.
High caloric food, yeah. So I've become a little more scientific about it. It started with just gels. It kind of ruins my stomach after a while, so I get real sick of them, especially if it's warm.
Yeah.
And so now when I get to the 100, the first 50, I try to eat as much solid food as I can throughout the first day.
Okay.
So the aid stations will have everything from gummy bears to peanut butter sandwiches, bean burritos, chips. I mean, a lot of the 100 miles kind of pride themselves on what kind of good food they provide the runners. And
okay.
You crave all sorts of really weird things when you're out running. So a good aid station has a wide variety, and I'll walk through and I'll grab a handful of peanut M&Ms and I'll do a handful of Doritos, a half a peanut butter sandwich and a cup of Coke. You know, it's like whatever solid foods, because I know at one point my body's going to have a hard time with it, and I want to get as much of that real calories in my body as possible.
It's weird to hear you describe like Doritos though, and like gummy bears.
Yeah.
You know, like you think runners. Yeah. And you think, you know, like health food, like, why aren't there almonds and stuff there? And there probably are, but we talked about this in grad school. I had read this thing about a guy named Dean Karnazes, who is sort of, I would say, what, like the most iconic ultra runner, right?
Yeah, he really founded the popularity
in
popular culture.
And he would talk about running all night and like picking up pizzas and, you know, your body can metabolize the junk food faster because you're burning it at such a rate.
Yeah.
It's like jet fuel.
You gotta
fuel
the fire, man. Start the furnace.
So like, I mean, you can't like do like the high value proteins because your body's going to take longer to metabolize those, right?
It's a fine balance, and you get a wide variety of runners. You've got some of the, especially among the elites, you've got different strategies.
Right.
And some of them follow very regimented, very specific foods.
Sure.
But for me, the trick is one, you've got to get foods that are high in fat. Because your brain kind of functions on that level of calorie. And so if you don't get any fats in your body, your brain starts to shut down.
Okay.
And, you know, you if you get into a bad mental funk, it will kill you in a race.
Okay.
And so keeping the brain fueled, for me, it's, I try to eat really healthy. I'm a relatively healthy guy. I also believe in living a real life. And so I'm not super crazy about it. But then when I get into a race, it's, you know, all bets are off. You know, whatever, you know, especially, so the first 50, I try to do as good as I can. I get, I'll get the electrolytes in, making sure you're staying hydrated and all those things. But on the back 50, it's like, whatever sounds good to me, I'm going to eat because
it's battle conditions.
It's battle conditions. It's like, you know, and so for Bryce, I had some really serious stomach issues because I planned on using gels. And I had gels and I had Ensures, and that's really all I had.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I had some random some issues. It caused me some problems and it slowed me down. Uray, I went into a little more methodical, but I think I got to, the first part of that course was much more difficult than I had anticipated. And I got into kind of the 50K, the 30 mile mark, several hours after I had anticipated doing that. And it was hot and it was exposed. And I told my wife, I'm like, I want Gatorade. Like, we had all these, I paid for like these highly scientifically mixed powdered drinks that I was mixing into my water, and I couldn't stand the taste of them anymore. I'm like, I want Gatorade. You know, there's a specific type of Gatorade that I like, you know? And so, so I left the aid station, they gave me whatever they had, and my wife is just awesome. She has this whole bucket of different types of food, and like, I love fresh blueberries. It's one of my, I mean, I could eat a whole carton of those when I come into the aid station.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she got me out of the aid station, she was gonna meet me 20 miles later, so she ran out to Montrose, which is just outside of Uray, and literally bought out this one flavor of Gatorade at the entire store. She got me like 10 of these things.
I'm curious, what flavor is it?
It's like lime pelopino. It's like a lime cucumber.
Oh yeah, okay.
And it's very light. It's not super sweet, but it's not super salty.
I know that
it's
one.
A very clean flavor.
Yeah.
And I no matter how late it is in a race, like Uray, even when I couldn't stomach anything, I could still down a
you
quart
can
of
do
this.
That.
Yeah, I could just, and I stayed hydrated very well because every aid station I came into, I'd literally drink a quart of that.
Wow.
I would just down it. And then I'd fill up my bottles with whatever I could. And you know, at that point, it's Mountain Dew or Pepsi or water or whatever you can get.
Right.
Cause you're craving the sugars, you're craving the caffeine. And it's just like, I've got to keep going. I need fuel.
Wow, dude. Yeah. My current favorite flavor, I love Gatorade.
Yeah.
I've always loved Gatorade. And, my current favorite flavor is Grape G2.
Okay.
Because it's a little lighter, you know, it's a little less saccharine.
Yeah.
As you're describing, my favorite all time flavor is, Fierce Lime.
Oh yeah.
They don't make it anymore.
See, and that's what always happens to me. You get a flavor you really like and they cut it out.
And, for a while, and they don't make these anymore, they had Tiger Woods flavors.
I remember those.
The Tiger Woods flavors were excellent.
Oh.
So anyway, I have particular tastes when it comes to Gatorade. So you mentioned that, I go, that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So you get through the first 50 and the back 50. What's that like?
Well, you're usually getting to the end of the day. You've been out on the trails. You've enjoyed it, but you're like, okay, now it's time to get it done.
It's business.
Yeah. It's business now. It's usually a lot. You start slowing down quite a bit. Again, that's when you start to have stomach problems. If you've been eating gels all day, your body starts to kind of revolt.
Yeah.
And it starts to get late afternoon, evening. You start changing out your gear, breaking out your headlamps. Mm. And then most races at about 50 miles will let you pick up a pacer. Their job is to run with you to make sure you don't do anything stupid and make sure you stay safe. Most races won't let them help you, so they can't carry stuff for you. So there are a few races that they call it muling. They'll let you mule, but most races won't. So they're there strictly to keep you safe on the course. And so they have to carry their own food and water. They can eat at the aid stations because they're part of the race, but they can't give you stuff. They can't carry things for you, like water bottles or anything
like
that.
Right. They can't supplement your efforts. So
no. You got to eat at the aid stations or whatever you carry. And so I wear a race vest and I have pockets. So I throw my junk in. And so I usually pick up a pacer about 50 or 60 miles. And that's when you really start depending on the conversation. For me, I start depending on the conversation.
Mm.
It's like, I want them fresh. I want them ready because I need them to talk to me as we start to get into the night.
Keep you mentally alert.
Yeah. And it really becomes a game. It's like, okay, I know the next aid station is 7 miles. And if I'm going if I could run it at a clip, you know, it'd be like an hour, 10, hour, 15.
Mm.
But now I've been running 50 miles. It's going to take me more like an hour and a half to 2 hours. So it starts to slow you down a little bit. So you start playing mental games. You don't think about, I'm at 60. I have 40 miles left. Because it just kills you.
Oh yeah, that's like, that'll destroy you.
7 miles to the next aid station, and then I'll get more food, I'll get more drink, and whatever.
Yeah.
And so it starts getting dark, it starts getting cold, depending on the course and where you're at. And we usually chat. I try just to keep it really loose and have a good time with it. I'm usually pretty good until about 1 or 2 a.m. Because at this point, you're getting to about...
What time does the race start?
Anywhere between 4 and 6 a.m.
God.
So at this point, you've been going for about 20 hours.
Yeah.
But you start... That's really the dark hours. You know, once you hit about 1 a.m., your body starts to try to shut you down. It's tired.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you're lethargic. It's hard to hold your eyes open.
It's dark.
Yeah. It's dark. You've run 60 miles, 70 miles, whatever it is.
Your body's like, why are we still doing this?
Yeah. So I, from my last race here in Ouray, and when it was at this period, I was actually doing a climb. So we were, it was like a 4,000 foot climb over about 6 or 7 miles.
Wait a minute. So before you get into this, 20 hours of running, are you running the whole time or do you like stop? Like, and if you stop, how long do you stop?
Well, you don't run for me at my level. Okay. I don't run the whole thing.
Okay.
I run the flats and downhills, but I usually speed hike the ups.
Okay.
The climbs.
Do you ever like stop like at points? Or?
Minimal, and as much as least as you don't want to stop, you want to avoid stopping as much as you can.
Okay.
We always say beware of the chair. You sit down in a chair 60 miles in, it's going to be awfully hard to get back up.
Yeah. Okay.
Mentally and physically.
Beware of the chair.
Yeah. And so, I usually plan strategic stops along the course. For most races, I try not to stop the first 50.
Okay.
I get my food at the aid station and I walk out and I keep going.
Okay.
But most races will usually require a medical check at 50.
Mm.
So they check your body weight. This is how they do that. They write your weight on a wristband, and then when they weigh you. And if you've lost more than 10% of your body weight, they'll usually hold you because at that point you're seriously dehydrated.
Yeah.
And your kidneys will start having problems, your liver.
Well, like 10% of your body weight, so like 15 to 20 pounds.
Yeah.
15 to 20 pounds?
It's possible, yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Like in the course of less than a day.
12 hours of running or so.
Jeez. 10,
12 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I will usually stop for a few minutes at 50
to
get some solid food in me. I'm getting into my nighttime push, so I'll usually try to eat as much food as I can.
Yeah.
You're in the evening, so it's getting colder, so I'll grab my jacket, my headlamp, whatever I'm going to need for the next section.
Okay, I get you.
Just to get ready.
Okay.
But I try not to wait too long because for me, something about my body makeup and calories and the way I go through things, I start to shake really bad.
Mm.
And it really threw my wife off the first couple hundreds. She's like, what is going on? Because I sit down within minutes, I'm just uncontrollable shaking.
Yeah.
And I don't feel bad. I just
like the tremors.
The tremors. And I'm cold. And so they wrap me up in a jacket and cover me up and I try to get as much calories in. And as long as I'm moving, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But after about 50 or 60 miles, every time I stop, I start shaking. And it takes me a good 10 or 15 minutes to lose it after I start walking again.
Jeez. Okay.
So I try not to stop a whole lot. That being said, sometimes you have issues, So you're this last year, I got to the last turnaround at this aid station. We were at a high point. It's like 10,000, 11,000 feet. It was cold. It was like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really suffering at this point. I was having a really hard time keeping my eyes open. And they've got a little campfire going, and there's a cot there sitting there. So I sit down. I'm trying to get some soup in me. And I was taking ginger tablets because it helped settle my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
The tablet caught in my throat as I was trying to take it down.
Yeah.
So I'm throwing up all over the place. And throwing up is not a comfortable experience to begin with. Now imagine your entire body fatigued after running 60 to 70 miles.
And now you're vomiting.
Yeah, and now you're vomiting. So every muscle from your toes to your neck is cramping while you're vomiting.
Jeez.
And you're just absolutely miserable. Plus you've just lost the calories you just tried to cram in. You're already depleted. And so I was just a wreck at that point. And so my pacer was like, Bard, you need a few minutes. He cleaned me up and he laid me down. He's like, laid on the cot, and they wrapped me up in this big, thick wool blanket. And they said, Bard, just sleep for 10 minutes and then we'll get going again. But a funny thing happens when you're in the race because these races have cutoffs.
Mm.
And if you don't hit the cutoff point by a certain time, they will pull you from the race because at that pace, they don't think you can finish the race in time. So you're laying there. And if you're the elites and you're so far ahead, you could lay there for 2 hours and you're just fine. But I'm not usually that. I'm kind of middle pack, back of the middle pack. I'm not that fast. I'm laying there on this cot and I just did this tick, 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 tick. I can see a clock going,
Yeah.
And I know every second that I lay there, I'm not making progress towards the finish line. So I lay there for 2 or 3 minutes and I couldn't sleep. I was uncomfortable. My body was hurting. And I heard somebody say like, Coke? And my ears perked out. I'm like, you have Coke? You have Coke at the aid station? He's like, oh yeah, I got a whole cooler right here. So this old guy sitting out in the middle of the mountains running this aid station for these runners at 1 o'clock in the morning, making everybody hot soup, pulls out this Coke, and I crack that bad boy open and downed it, and I just instantly feel better. The sugar, the caffeine just rushes in your body.
Like Popeye, like
spinach,
right? Oh yeah,
it's my spinach, I'm like, I'm ready to go. Let's get moving.
Wow.
And, so we got up and we took off, but you know, you get so tired those dark hours before dawn. At one point I was with my pacer. We were heading back down. I was to the next aid station and I was like, dude, I just need to close my eyes for a minute. Like, I don't think I'm able to sleep. I just have to close my eyes. So I literally lay down in the middle of this dirt trail. I'm laying there on the dirt trail, just my eyes closed. And he's like, all right, I'll give you 5 minutes. I'm like, all right. And come to find out later, every time he said that, he'd give me 2 minutes, you know, cause he was trying to keep me going. And these other runners come running along and they're like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay? And he's like, yeah, he just needed to close his eyes for a minute, you know.
Yeah, he's fine.
They're like, oh yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah.
See you later, you know. And then you kind of suffer through the dark hours. And then when the sun starts to rise again, your body wakes up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're still tired, but the body kind of goes into this natural rhythm of the sun's coming up, time to wake up. And then depending on how fast you are, where you are on the course, you've got a couple hours left or you're getting close to the finish line. And it's just a matter of keeping the calories going in so your body will continue to move.
And that's got to be just horrible. You're like, ugh, like, I don't want to eat anything.
Yeah. It just does horrible things to your body and your mind. Your mind is really, where, like I say, where you really start to struggle, you know. For example, at Ure, I got into, I want to say it was a 75-ish mile aid station. I had about 25 miles left. And I walk up to the aid station, the sun was, it wasn't even light yet. The sun wasn't up, but it was that twilight kind of between time. Mm-hmm. And my wife gets out of the car. She'd been waiting there at the aid station for me. And I was going to pick her up at the next aid station, which is 9 miles away. And she says, all right, Bart, you know, and she was trying to motivate me. She said, don't sit down. Just keep going. You got to stay ahead of the cutoffs. And I just melted down. I was like, there's no way. I can't. There's no way. I got 9 miles to the next aid station. I got another 12 miles of, you know, I got six, eight miles of climbing that I got to go drop down into the valley and then I got to run up the road to the finish line. There's no way. I can't finish that. There's no way.
Yeah.
It's impossible. And I sat down in the chair. I'm like, I'm done. I'm not going to be able to finish this. And she was like, she was totally taken aback. She's like, Bart, I did not mean like you're going to hit the cutoff. I'm just trying to, you know, you got to keep going. And it's like, no, it's impossible. I've let everybody down. That's it. We're finished. And your brain just doesn't think. She's like, Bart, let me help you understand this. You've got 20 miles and you have 10 hours. You've got plenty. I mean, you could walk it and make it.
Yeah.
But the brain just does not want to compute that. It does not think I only have 20 miles. It thinks.
Well, yeah, you could walk that.
Yeah. Yeah. Easily. Yeah. It thinks I'm so tired. I can't even comprehend doing another 10 hours. It's impossible. I can't do it. And so, you know, she handed me a Red Bull. She's like, here's your Red Bull. I'll see you at the next aid station. Got in the car and left.
Yeah.
You know,
it's good.
You crack open the Red Bull and you down it and 5 minutes later, the caffeine is rushing in your body and you're like, ah, I'm good to go. And you find yourself running down the trail again. And
wow.
So it's just a matter of keeping yourself going and caloried up. And towards the end, I usually do depend on caffeine. It kind of keeps me going.
Well, no, I think that's fair. Talk me through the last, 5 miles, 2 miles, 1 mile. Talk me through what's going through your head at that point.
For me, it's a beast. I usually about 90, 95. Once 90 still feels a little ways out. 10 miles still feels a little ways.
Yeah, that's still a hike.
When you get within 5 miles, both at Ure and at Bryce, both the hundreds I've run, when you get to 95, you start to feel the gravity of the finish line. It starts pulling you a little bit.
Yeah,
you start to have a little bit of a second wind.
You get a little momentum.
Get a little momentum and you start feeling good. So Ure, you do this nice downhill, this nice fast downhill, and it feels like you're running fast. You're really not because you're so tired.
Right.
And your body starts to my body just kind of went numb. I actually felt pretty good. And then we hit this dirt road and it's like a mile and a half or 2 miles up into the finish line. And you're just kind of going. You're like, 2 miles. I mean, come on. I mean, I could do that even on my worst day. I could do 2 miles.
Right.
And you're not running very fast.
I've already run 49 times this.
Yeah. I mean, this is nothing, you know, as you start playing those mental games mentally and it keeps you motivated again.
Sure.
And then you get to the point where you see the finish line and you forget everything. You forget the pain. You forget the struggle. I always get emotional. Your body's kind of at the edge. You know, my family's always there. My mom usually comes in and supports me at my races.
Nice.
My kids are there and they usually run in with me at the finish line. And I get really emotional because it's not just, I mean, yeah, I ran the miles, but they put up with months and months of me training.
Yeah.
They're there. It's important to them to see me finish. You know, and for my kids, I'm always teaching them, man, you can do so much if you really try, if you really work at it. And I want them to see that. I try not to hide the pain too much. I want them to understand this hurt. So it's not easy for me, but it's important to keep going when it's not easy.
Yeah. I think that's a great lesson.
And then it becomes very surreal. You cross the finish line and for a few minutes, you can literally remember the past 25 to 30 hours. Every step, every mountain, every stream, every river, every tree, the beautiful sights that you saw, for a few minutes, it's all just right there and fresh in your brain. And it's just cool. I mean, you can think about, okay, for races that start and finish at the same place, it's neat because it's like, I was standing here 30 hours ago and I had a whole thing ahead of me and now I've done it.
And I was feeling so great.
Yeah.
And now I feel sort of great.
But I'm really, really tired.
Yeah. But I'm also in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Aftermath of the race, what does that do to your body? What is the next couple hours? What is the next couple of days like for you?
I'm usually pretty sick or nauseous for the first couple hours after a race. I try to drink as much as I can, get calories. So like Gatorades or chocolate milk almost always sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I really stick with kind of, I calorie hydrate pretty heavily because food just does not sound good for the first 4 or 6 hours for me.
Mm-hmm.
I usually, depending on when you finish your race, you have some part of that day where it's a hot, some people do ice baths, some people do hot tubs. It really, sometimes I go back and forth, whatever feels good. For me, it's just wanting to sit and not have to move.
Yeah.
Because the hardest thing for me during the race is that you never get to just stop and just enjoy it or you never get to just stop. Every time during the race, you know you're going to have to get going again. You know you're going to have to keep moving. So for hours and hours and hours, it's just keep moving, just keep moving, just keep moving.
Yeah.
Where to be able to sit down and just say, no.
And just be still?
I'm not going to move anymore. I'm going to just sit here for as long as I feel like sitting here.
Are you like chafed or like do you feel it in your knees, your legs? Like where are you feeling it most? Back?
You kind of hurt all over. It's the body's pretty fatigued. The muscles are tired. Your legs feel a little swollen. You feel a little tight. I've never finished 100 and had pain.
Okay.
Not in the sense where you've injured yourself at least. But you do feel like your legs just feel heavy and leaden and just like they're big water balloons, like you can't really, waddle a little bit. I found gear that worked for me really well.
You're not like chafed?
No, I'm not usually chafed too bad. I've got like a body gel that I use, to prevent chafing as well. And there's lots of those kind of tricks and staying dry and those kind of things that avoid some of that. I run in Pearl Zumi shoes. I've never had a blister on a 100-mile race.
Nice.
I wear, Injinji socks, the toe socks. I don't know if you've seen those.
Yeah.
They keep my toes from blistering. So I usually am in pretty good shape.
Okay.
It's just that you're just done.
Wow.
It's like I'm out, mic drop, and I'm finished.
Yeah. Heard a rumor, toenails pop off. Is that true?
Yeah. I usually lose about one toenail 100.
Only one?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same one. It's the big toe on my right foot for some reason.
And it pops off?
Well, sometimes there are some people will lose their toenails during the race.
Okay.
My feet have never been in that bad a condition where I lose things during the race. But, usually within a couple of days of the race, it starts to go black.
Gross.
It just kind of turns black, like there's blood underneath it or it gets beat up, and I'm not sure all the anatomy behind it, but it turns black, and then it'll either completely fall off, or after a few weeks, you'll start to see this really crazy rigid line at the base of your toenail where it's starting to grow back.
Okay.
And it's funny because it takes almost a year for my big toe to actually grow all the way back. It's
about and then you're doing another 100.
Yeah, about the time it's come back. It's like, all right, my feet look normal again. Now I'm going to go lose it.
Yeah, let's go ruin it.
Yeah.
That was incredibly insightful because I don't have the interest necessarily to run 100 myself, but to hear about it was just incredibly compelling. So, the company's called Feed Your Crazy.
Yep.
That sounds like sort of a crazy endeavor.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing it with me.
Absolutely.
I want to talk again. We have to wrap up, but about Feed Your Crazy.
Yep.
You guys have a Kickstarter going.
We are just getting ready to launch the Kickstarter. It's going to launch in the next 2 or 3 weeks, so late May.
So this episode will have aired.
Yes, yeah. So we've got a Kickstarter campaign running.
Yeah, so perfect. And tell me about you. So you guys are like a lifestyle brand, your clothing brand.
It's a lifestyle brand. It's a motivation brand. It's
great.
Getting people a language to embrace, what the world population calls us, and they call us crazy.
Yeah.
And so, we started as just kind of for fun of it. We made a couple of shirts. People liked them. We've done several prints, several of them styles. We partnered with a couple of technical wear companies, and we've made some specific brand clothing, for Feed Your Crazy.
So cycling jerseys?
So Pearl Izumi is kind of partnered with us, and
they
make custom technical shirts, singlets, and running shirts with us. With our brand and built out on it. It says Pearl Zumi. It says Feed Your Crazy. They're
nice.
Pretty sweet gear. But we've gotten to the point where our audience has gotten large enough that I'm constantly running out of inventory.
Okay.
I don't make big enough prints, and we started this with literally, it's like, here's $100, let's go print a couple of shirts. And,
yeah.
All right, we made some money, let's take all that money, let's roll it in, let's do another print. And it's been eking along very slowly, and we're getting to the point where we're having a lot more requests for gear and okay. for clothing and a wider range of what we create. And so,
that's fantastic, man.
Oh, it's a good problem to have. You right. know, unfortunately, I'm not in a place where I can just go sink a bunch of money into a big print. And you start thinking about, for a brand, for a clothing company, I've got to have, you know, 5 or 6 designs. Each of those designs have to be in 4 or 5 different sizes for men's and for women's. How do you get enough inventory
yeah.
so that you can actually go out and market this gear?
Yeah, and you need startup capital.
You need startup capital. And so, we've decided at this point, we're going to try to crowdsource, to be able to basically pre-order what they want, you know, by contributing to the campaign.
Nice.
Pick the shirts. We're going to do several shirt designs. We're going to do several hat designs. We're going to do a hoodie and some more technical gear. But basically just spreading the word and allowing people to embrace what they love to do without having to rationalize or justify why it's not crazy.
Right.
Just enjoy the fact that they are crazy.
That's fantastic. Where can people find more about Feed Your Crazy?
Facebook. We have a page. We are also on Instagram. Okay. And we have a website, www.feedyourcrazy.com.
Fantastic.
The Kickstarter campaign will be linked on all of those pages.
All right. Well, I will link to all that on the companion blog piece. This will come out, I think, June 3rd. So we'll make sure to get you plenty of juice.
Awesome.
You are running about 3 weeks after that, right?
Yes.
So have a great race, man. And thanks for taking the time to tell us all about ultra running and Feeding Your Crazy.
Oh, this was awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
And that wraps up episode 60 of the John of All Trades podcast with Bard Parnell, Feeding His Crazy. Helping you feed your crazy. Whatever your crazy happens to be, he is the dude to do it. Check out their Kickstarter and help them grow that brand and help other people discover their crazy and feed their own crazy. You can always go to johnofalltrades.us. Check out our entire archive. We have 60 episodes. So much is there, ranging from the world of athletics, the world of finance, to the world of art and everything in between. All different businesses, all different types of people on the John of All Trades podcast. Find us at our website, johnofalltrades.us. We are sponsored by 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. If you are seeking to run a campaign of any stripe, be it political, be it promotional, 4Degrees will target your message to the person who needs to hear it, and will do it for cheaper than you have probably been doing it before. Just talk to Zach, reach out to him, he's got it going on. Number 4. DEGRE.ES. 4Degrees, proud sponsor of the John of All Trades podcast, which is a production of Deft Communications. New episodes previewed on Monday come up every Wednesday. So follow us on social media, Facebook, JOATpod, Twitter, JOATpod. Just get plugged in, John of All Trades. So many platforms, so many ways to enjoy us. That'll do it for this week. We will see you next Monday, where we announce a new episode. Comes out on Wednesday. Until then, say goodnight, crazy.